Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Today is Elizabeth Peratrovich Day. It's a day recognizing the contributions of the Tlingit civil rights activist who advocated for all Alaska Natives. Peratrovich and her husband, Roy Peratrovich, faced discrimination throughout their lives, including in Juneau in the 1940s. Along with other Native advocates, they campaigned for the passage of the Anti-Discrimination Act of 1945, the first civil rights legislation of its kind in the country, signed into law on this day. Peratrovich died in the 1950s and is buried at Evergreen Cemetery in Juneau. Last year, February 16th, was nationally recognized as Elizabeth Peratrovich Day for the first time. Tune into the rebroadcast of Juneau Afternoon at 7 to hear a conversation with local Indigenous activists about the importance of education, advocacy, and uplifting living heroes to honor Peratrovich's legacy. That's at 7. You can also find it at ktoo.org. Whale watching is one of Juneau's most popular and lucrative tourist attractions. The humpbacks that come here each summer are beloved by visitors and locals alike. Many are even known by name. But scientists say there's a lot that we don't know about them. As KTOO's Anna Canny reports, a new city proposal hopes to change that with a study funded by money from cruise ship passengers.
Juneau is one of the busiest whale watching hubs in the world. There are dozens of boats that operate here. And over the last few decades, the fleet has been growing.
And it's because of the cruise ship industry.
That's Heidi Pearson, a professor of marine biology at the University of Alaska Southeast. She studies Juneau's small population of resident humpback whales. Each summer, they come here to feed. And hundreds of thousands of visitors, mostly from cruise ships, go on boat tours, hoping to catch a glimpse of their fins or their flukes. Pearson says that all of those boats crowding Juneau's narrow waterways have the potential to stress whales out.
We know that in the presence of whale watching vessels, they travel more quickly, they have shorter dives, and they have a faster respiration rate.
But researchers don't really know how tourism could affect the whale's health long term. That's why Pearson and her collaborators at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration have proposed a new humpback whale monitoring program. They hope to fund it with money from cruise ship passengers. Each year, the city of Juneau collects a small tax from each passenger. But city tourism manager Alex Pierce says that money can't be used for just anything.
Passenger fee projects are pretty highly restricted in how we can use the funds.
Back in 2016, the city was sued by the cruise industry for using passenger fees to construct the park that houses Juneau's iconic life-sized humpback whale sculpture. The lawsuit was settled in 2019, and according to the settlement, the cruise ship industry now has more of a say in what the city spends its money on. Pierce says the whale monitoring study makes sense as a possible passenger fee project, because whale watching is one of the city's most popular and lucrative tourist attractions. It brings in at least $60 million annually. But she also says Juneau's whales are more than just moneymakers.
At the same time, they hold a really important emotional place in the community, both for visitors who are thrilled to be able to see them and for residents who want to see them protected and not feel like they're being harassed or bothered.
In recent years, the health and happiness of local whales has been the subject of public scrutiny. Some local whale watching companies have been looking for ways to minimize their potential disturbance to whales, but there's not a lot of science to help them figure out how to do that. The monitoring project will focus on taking blubber and skin samples from local whales. The blubber stores stress hormones that build up over time, and so testing it could help scientists to better understand how tour boat traffic is affecting the whales. Blubber samples also contain information about things like disease, reproductive health, pregnancy, and diet. And photo surveys will help to round out the study's data set. Pearson says taking this holistic approach to monitoring is important because tourism is not the only stressor for Juneau's whales.
And it's hard to look at one factor in isolation because they all work together to impact a whale's health.
Climate change threatens their food sources. Noise pollution can disrupt their communication, and entanglement in fishing gear or vessel strikes can injure or even kill them. This summer, for instance, the calf of one of Juneau's most well-known resident whales died after it was hit by a boat. Juneau's Whale Health Monitoring Project, along with all the other proposed passenger fee projects, will be up for public comment starting next week. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
And attorneys for the only Native reservation in Alaska presented arguments yesterday in federal court in a lawsuit over fishing rights. Metlakatla Indian community has been pursuing the case for years, arguing that its tribal sovereignty and economic security are at stake. But the state of Alaska says it could throw a wrench in its efforts to manage fisheries sustainably. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone was in the courtroom and spoke to Alaska News Nightly host Casey Grove.
Okay, so back in 2020, and actually on August 7th, 2020, it's the anniversary of the founding of Metlakatla, the tribal government Metlakatla Indian community filed suit against the Dunleavy administration. The suit's a little complicated, but I'll give you the basic gist. Essentially, they say that the law that created Metlakatla's reservation also guaranteed tribal members the right to fish, even outside the boundaries of the reservation. Right now, once they get 1,000 feet from shore, you got to have a state limited entry fishing permit. So it goes back to when Metlakatla was founded in the late 19th century. Back then, some Tsimshian people fled persecution in Old Metlakatla in British Columbia, and at the invitation of the U.S. government, settled on Annette Island. That's just a few miles south of Ketchikan. So in 1891, shortly afterwards, Congress passed a law creating the Annette Islands Reserve, and that's the law that we're going to talk a whole lot about here. Now, the law doesn't explicitly say that the reservation includes the right to fish outside its boundaries, but Metlakatla argues that Congress intended for tribal members to have the resources they need to prosper. The state, though, argues that Metlakatla fishermen are able to buy limited entry permits like everybody else, and they say allowing Metlakatla members to fish without permits could make it much more difficult to manage fisheries sustainably.
And how have things gone so far with this case?
So in 2021, a federal district judge dismissed the case, but it was revived by the Ninth Circuit the following year. The Ninth Circuit basically sided with Metlakatla, finding that Congress did in fact guarantee Metlakatla tribal members the right to fish in the waters that they traditionally fished. They sent it back down to the district court to figure out the extent of that right. And then the Biden administration decided to weigh in. The Department of Justice filed an amicus brief that's more or less consistent with Metlakatla's key arguments. And that brings us to those oral arguments in court.
Gotcha. Okay, tell us about those oral arguments.
So lawyers for the state and for Metlakatla and for the DOJ filed into the courthouse at the top of Juneau's federal building and started working out the details. And basically, the big dispute is over whether the people of Metlakatla have traditionally fished in what are now Alaska's fishing districts 1 and 2. That's in southern southeast Alaska, near the tip of the panhandle. The state argues that the Ninth Circuit decision requires Metlakatla to show that its people traditionally fished in those areas. They were focused on portions of a Ninth Circuit decision that cited cases that are based on Aboriginal rights. And they were focused especially on the Ninth Circuit's use of the phrase, since time immemorial, as in Metlakatla's fishermen have fished in these waters since time immemorial. Metlakatla's attorneys and one from DOJ argued that the case relies not on tribal members' historical use of those fisheries, but the idea that Congress implicitly included fishing rights in the law creating the reservation. Metlakatla says it can prove their members fished near Ketchikan and Prince of Wales Island if the court lets them. They told the court they have evidence of historical fishing patterns from before and after the move from Old Metlakatla in BC. But the case hasn't gotten that far. It's been 3.5 years since it was filed, and we're still a ways out from trial. And one more note on that. The arguments that we heard are very similar to those that I heard when I covered the Ninth Circuit case a couple of years ago. Metlakatla's attorneys argued that the issues were settled law.
Eric, you said that it's still maybe a ways out before a trial, but what comes next?
First, probably a lot of waiting. Judge Sharon Gleason took the case under advisement, and it could be a while before we get a ruling in the case. Now, both sides are asking for the case to end here. They're asking what's called summary judgment. But Gleason asked each side how long they would need to prepare for a trial. I took that as a sign that the case is not likely to end with this next ruling. Take that with a grain of salt. So once a decision is out, it would probably be at least another 6 to 9 months before this thing goes to trial. But I spoke with Metlakatla Mayor Albert Smith. He was in the courtroom dressed in regalia, and he said he's pleased that the case is making progress.
Oh, it means everything for the people of Metlakatla. It's something that we've been working and putting together for years, decades actually. And to see it moving along and moving forward is a great thing.
But as for what's next, we'll have to wait and see.
That was Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone talking with Alaska News Nightly host Casey Grove. And as for the weather, it's a sunny day here in Juneau. Tomorrow and Sunday, expect more of the same, with temperatures around 40 degrees during the daytime. Sunday night, there might be a little bit of rain. You're listening to KTOO.